Chapter 23. "No, please," said Dirk, restraining Miss Pierce's hand from opening a letter from the Inland Revenue. "There are wilder skies than these." He had emerged from a spell of tense brooding in his darkened office, and there was an air of excited concentration about him. It had taken his actual signature on an actual salary check to persuade Miss Pierce to forgive him for the latest unwarrantable extravagance with which he had returned to the office, and he felt that just to sit there blatantly opening letters from the taxman was to take his magnanimous gesture in entirely the wrong spirit. She put the envelope aside. "Come," he said, "I have something I wish you to see. I shall observe your reactions with the very greatest of interest." He bustled back into his own office and sat at his desk. She followed him in patiently and sat opposite, pointedly ignoring the new unwarrantable extravagance sitting on the desk. The flashy brass plaque for the door had stirred her up pretty badly, but the silly phone with the big red push buttons she regarded as being beneath contempt, and she certainly wasn't going to do anything rash like smile until she knew for certain that the cheque wouldn't bounce. The last time he signed a cheque for her, he had cancelled it before the end of the day to prevent it, as he explained, falling into the wrong hands. The wrong hands, presumably, being those of her bank manager. He thrust a piece of paper across the desk. She picked it up and looked at it. Then she turned it round and looked at it again. She looked at the other side. Then she put it down. "Well," demanded Dirk, "what do you make of it? Tell me." Miss Pierce sighed. "It's a lot of meaningless squiggles done in blue felt tip on a piece of typing paper," she said. "It looks like you did them yourself." "No," barked Dirk. "Well, yes," he admitted, "but only because I believe that it is the answer to the problem." "What problem?" "The problem," insisted Dirk, slapping the table, "of the conjuring trick, I told you." "Yes, Mr. Gently, several times I think it was just a conjuring trick. You see them on the telly." With this difference, that this one was completely impossible. "Couldn't have been impossible, or he wouldn't have done it. Stands to reason." "Exactly," said Dirk excitedly. "Exactly. Miss Pierce, you are a lady of rare perception and insight." "Thank you, sir. Can I go now?" "Wait, I haven't finished yet, not by a long way, not by a bucketful. You have demonstrated to me the depth of your perception and insight. Allow me to demonstrate mine." Miss Pierce slumped patiently in her seat. "I think," said Dirk, "you will be impressed. Consider this. An intractable problem. In trying to find the solution to it, I was going round and round in little circles in my mind, over and over the same maddening things. Clearly, I wasn't going to be able to think of anything else until I had the answer, but equally clearly, I would have to think of something else if I was ever going to get the answer. How to break the circle? Ask me how." "How?" said Miss Pierce, obediently, but without enthusiasm. "By writing down what the answer is," exclaimed Dirk, "and here it is." He slapped the piece of paper triumphantly and sat back with a satisfied smile. Miss Pierce looked at it dumbly. "With the result," continued Dirk, "that I am now able to turn my mind to fresh and intriguing problems, like, for instance..." He took the piece of paper, covered with its aimless squiggles and doodlings, and held it up to her. "What language," he said in a low, dark voice, "is this written in?" Miss Pierce continued to look at it dumbly. Dirk flung the piece of paper down, put his feet up on the table, and threw his head back with his hands behind it. "You see what I have done?" he asked the ceiling, which seemed to flinch slightly being yanked so suddenly into the conversation. "I have transformed the problem from an intractably difficult and possibly quite insoluble conundrum into a mere linguistic puzzle. Albeit," he muttered after a long moment of silent pondering, "an intractably difficult and possibly insoluble one." He swung back to gaze intently at Janice Pierce. "Go on," he urged. "Say that it's insane, but it might just work." Janice Pierce cleared her throat. "It's insane," she said. "Trust me." Dirk turned away and sagged sideways off his chair, much as the sitter for the thinker probably did when Rodin went off to be excused. He suddenly looked profoundly tired and depressed. "I know," he said in a low, dispirited voice, "that there is something profoundly wrong somewhere, and I know that I must go to Cambridge to put it right, but I would feel less fearful if I knew what it was." "Can I get on now, please, then?" said Miss Pierce. Dirk looked up at her glumly. "Yes," he said with a sigh, "but just tell me," he flicked at the piece of paper with his fingertips, "what do you think of this, then?" "Well, I think it's childish," said Janice Pierce, frankly.
But,
said Dirk, thumping the table in frustration, "don't you understand that we need to be childish in order to understand? Only a child sees things with perfect clarity because it hasn't developed all those filters which prevent us from seeing things we don't expect to see. And why don't you go and ask one? Thank you, Miss Pierce, said Dirk, reaching for his hat. Once again you have rendered me an inestimable service, for which I am profoundly grateful. He swept out.